I'm going to bring out Randy Block to finish this up with a longer-term forecast. And again, it's a pleasure to be with you again this year. Thank you.
Great job, bud. Are these guys good or what? Huh? Let's give them a hand. You know, every time I have an opportunity to listen to Kevin and Mike speak, I learn a lot, and I hope you all appreciate the quality work that not only they do, but the rest of the staff to not just pull this Outlook seminar together, but a lot of the data, research, and analysis that we put in front of you on a daily and weekly basis. I'm really proud of the team. And obviously, to put a team together like that, you have to have support of you as members, clients of Cattle Facts. I can't thank you enough for allowing us to keep this team together to where we can provide this quality and depth of analysis to you on a regular basis. Again, that's not easy to do, and I think you all heard what Don said earlier. Kevin has been with us now for, just finished his 38th year. That's a great accomplishment. Well, it's my pleasure to try to spend a few minutes with you putting a bow around some of these things and talking about where we're headed in here from a market standpoint. You heard Dr. Douglas's weather forecast. Kevin and Mike have gone through the global market situation. Obviously, we've laid the outlook out for you. But really, what we're all in this business for is to make money, isn't it? That's why we do it. To take our grass resource that we all have in our different environments of the country and to make that into a profitable business. It wasn't a very profitable business as you look at this chart from 1980 through 1990. I want you all to absorb that. There was $32 a head profit for four industry segments. That doesn't work, does it? That doesn't work. And I'll show you a little bit of data in a little bit to put this in perspective of some of the outcome as we went through it. Kevin and Mike have talked about the demand growth that we've seen, especially over the course of the last 10 to 15 years. The quality of product that we're producing as an industry today and the way consumers are responding with their pocketbook. That's what you have over here on the right-hand side. Now, some of you would look at it and say, well, some of these segments of the industry are making too much money. This all evens out over time, doesn't it? The bottom line, what I'd like you to see in here is when we look at 2020, all industry segments will be profitable. How many times do we get an opportunity to say that? That all industry segments will be profitable. Some not quite as strong as we'd like to see. We'd like to see the cow-calf producers making more money. It's been a little bit thin in here. But we'd like to see more profitability. I think with some of the trade situation that is coming, that will not be too far behind. But the bottom line is we estimate there's going to be nearly $500 a head. Nearly $500 of profitability for the industry to split up as we come through the course of the year. That's one of the best numbers we've seen in history, isn't it? One of the best numbers we've seen in history, and that goes to a lot of the work that each and every one of you do as you're going to these committee meetings, and you're making decisions that are not impacting this business 12 months from now, they're impacting this business 3, 4, 5, 6, a decade down the road. I look at some of the things that our team walked you through here over the course of the last hour. A lot of those things were decisions a number of you made 10, 15 years ago in boardrooms. So thank you for your service to the industry. We're seeing the benefit of it come out. Most of you in the room have seen the old cattle cycle chart. For those of you that are younger folks in the room, this is what we call the old cattle cycle, the boom and bust cattle cycle. This was a supply-driven cycle. You can see going back in here from the 30s, the supply would run up into the middle of the decade. We would oversupply the market. It would crash. We would break. We'd have to liquidate the nation's cow herd. We'd break into the end of the decade, and we'd do it over and over and over again. You could set your clock to it. Demand wasn't really part of the equation, was it? We were just supply, supply, supply. Over the course of the last 20 to 30 years, things have really started to change, and they've changed dramatically here. If you look at what we've done coming off the 1975 peak, we had 132 million head of cattle in our inventory. We basically have 95 million today. Record beef production with 35 million fewer cattle. There is a great sustainability story there. There is a great story there. We need to tell the story. When I look at where we've been here over the last several years, we basically were in a situation, had it not been for the drought that we went through earlier in this decade, our numbers would have been pretty flat all the way through here. We wouldn't have gone through this last dip where we lost 8 million head of cattle in our inventory. 5 years ago, I told you on this stage that 31 to 32 million head, we had the demand to support 31 to 32 million head of beef cattle, beef cows, I should say. We've come right back to that number. There's been no surprise in here relative to the inventory numbers flattening out. We can measure the demand said, hey, that's about what we can support and the industry would still stay profitable. So that's where we are for now. I don't see our inventory numbers changing very much unless it ends up being a drought-driven situation where we have to adjust based on our feed availability or water availability. That's our greatest risk, I believe, as an industry if it's a weather event. I don't see it from a demand-side standpoint or a lack of profitability or lack of money coming into the industry. The other thing I see when I look at these numbers, we touched on it a little bit, but I want you to think this through. We talked about exports over the course of the next few years. This is a little bit of a what if. But if we continue our trend line growth in exports, what we've continued to see here over time, and if we're able to start gaining access to the Chinese market, again at a rate of 100 million more pounds on an annual basis going forward, that may be conservative once we really get things moving, but giving you a little bit of insight around that. Obviously, the situation that we've had, our Australian friends, what they've gone through with their terrible drought, their fires that they've had, their production levels are going to be off substantially here over the next few years as they start to rebuild those herds, aren't they? That's going to create an opportunity that the U.S. will likely become the number one supplier of protein into Japan again, of beef protein into Japan again. Again, the trade agreement, the bilateral trade agreement that was struck with Japan is a big deal. Japan is our number one largest market today. They buy not only a lot of beef, but a lot of other protein as well. So keep that in mind. This, though, I think is really important for you to think about. What's this mean if we're able to grow exports at this kind of a clip? What would you envision the nation's cow herd would look like? It would pretty well flatten out, wouldn't it? Remember, we're getting the productivity increases that Kevin was talking about earlier. That wouldn't tell me that we're going to go through a big downsizing of the nation's cow herd. The cow herd would be flat, actually would potentially increase a little bit here over the course of the next 5 to 7 years as we started to see this export situation improve. Now, one of the things I see out here, and Kevin talked about leverage packing capacity early. Obviously, when we went through the situation from the number of cattle that had been harvested, let me give you a benchmark here so everybody remembers. In 2000, that was the largest number of fed cattle in the history of our industry. We harvested 30.2 million head of fed cattle that year. By the time we got to 2015, we were harvesting 23 million, a 7 million head reduction. Is it any wonder that we lost this many packing plants? I mean, the packing industry was decimated when we didn't have cattle to run through these plants. That's why we closed those plants. We haven't had new plants come back online. Our numbers have responded. They've bounced back in here where the demand situation is. I would say, as we look at it as an industry, our biggest limitation going forward is how are we going to be able to harvest all the animals with our existing capacity? So I think this is something that we'll be watching to see. I'm not going to be surprised if we potentially see some additional packers come online here over the course of the next few years, or we see some expansion of existing plants to help us work through some of this bottleneck. But it's pretty clear in here where we are. We're really going to have a difficult time, in my opinion, growing the herd very much more from where it is with the situation we have with shackle space, not only on the fed cattle side, but on the non-fed side. We've had that same situation over there as well. From an overall standpoint, I think there's a pretty good perspective for you here when we look at the value of these exports. This is beef, pork, and poultry all rolled together. And you can pick out the individual lines, but I wanted to give you a little bit of a longer-term view, going back to 2000. In 2000, the total value of exports in the U.S. to various markets around the country were about $6.5 billion. Significant number. But look what happened in the next 10 years by 2010. It had doubled, hadn't it? The number doubled. Beef number increased less than $1 billion, but total exports doubled. Obviously, I think all of us remember what happened with the beef number there between 2000 and 2010. We had a little cow, didn't we? And our export markets were closed off. The loss in value of those export markets when we were closed out in late 2003, 2004, it cost us $175 a head immediately. I would argue that that number, when it was all said and done, cost our industry in excess of $30 billion. I'm probably conservative on that number, but I believe it costs us at least that much. So think about what Kevin talked about from traceability, sustainability, food safety. These things, we've got to make sure that we're planning ahead. We're making some of those decisions to where we aren't dealt this kind of situation where we lose access. You can see what our forecast is as we go through 2025. We've been growing these exports basically $6 billion in total every decade. We think we have an opportunity we could grow these exports another $6 billion in the next 5 years. Really accelerate the rate of growth and what that contributes back to the overall industry. This year we'll export somewhere in the neighborhood of 19 billion pounds. I think it's very possible we could be, that's of total protein from the U.S. to consumers around the globe. I think it's very likely we'll be exporting somewhere closer to 25 billion pounds by the middle of this next decade, or the middle of this decade that we're now in. So again, a very positive situation that I think is developing. Kevin talked about the quality shift that we've gone through in this industry. This is how big I think it is. I think we're going through a major transformation in our industry where we're moving away from the boom and bust supply-driven market to a demand-driven market. A market that waits for the signal. What is the demand signal? We respond to that demand signal. We're not all out here just overdoing this and overdoing that. We're listening. We're looking. What does the consumer want? And we're trying to respond to those messages. As I look at this, this is something that I think is incredibly important for us in a number of aspects of our markets. This is just giving you a little bit of a feel of how our markets are rewarding cattle that come through the system. A number of you in the room today are cow-calf operators that retain ownership of these cattle all the way through the feed yard. And these cattle are being hung up on some sort of a value-based grid. You can see the situation. This data goes back here to 2012. You can see what these premiums have been. Cattle grade over 80% choice, been bringing back an extra $45 ad premium. You saw it in here for a period this fall when the premiums were strong. We had premiums as great as $250 a head for choice and prime animals that were grading over 90% choice. So this is just averages. But the message, I think, is pretty clear. We are really seeing the market reward and send a signal for us to do more of this, produce more of the good ones. And I think we're certainly going to continue to do that. Now, when you go through that situation, I would say these are some of the things, if you focus your eyes on the red here on the chart, these are some of the other things that I think are going to influence our grids going forward. Today, we're pretty well focused on yield and quality, aren't we, when we look at our valuing grids. I think there is going to be value associated with being able to tell the story in here on animal care, the history, the traceability, the source verified. That's going to become a check mark in here on a lot of the valuing systems going forward. The food safety protocol, the sustainability, the record, the story. I know some of you don't want to hear this, but this is what our consumers are telling us. This is important to them. I think it's a great opportunity for us. We have data today that we've never had before. We have ways of collecting data today that we've never had before. I think we'll be able to respond to this challenge as we move forward. Now, this is always a conversation in our industry. Is our cash market getting too thin? Are we getting into a situation there's just not enough cattle that are trading in the cash market that we have adequate price discovery? Well, we're getting to a spot, if you think about the premium charts I just shared with you, obviously people that are producing more of the better cattle have been incentivized to sell cattle on grids or formulas to try to take advantage, haven't they? Take advantage of being able to add more dollars back to the bottom line. But where we are here today as an industry, I think this is something that we're going to have to address in here in the next few years. We do need to have a viable cash market in order to establish credible price discovery on a daily and weekly basis. Again, some areas of the country, this is not an issue. When we get into the northern areas especially, we get into the central and southern plains, it's becoming a little more of an issue. So I just say, this is something we're going to have to deal with. It's not going to go away, and again, I think we'll find a solution to it as we move forward. One of the last things I want to leave with you is this. Some of you in the room, as I look across here in the front, I can't quite see all of you in the back, but I see a lot of you in the room that didn't live through what we went through from 1980 to 1998. It sucked. Let's just be honest. I think every one of us in here can think about neighbors that we lost as we came through that time period. People that we'd grown up with that were neighbors, that our kids rode the school bus together, and they didn't make it through that time period. Look at these numbers. From 1980 to 1998, beef demand was cut in half. The cattle inventory went down 20 million head. The number on here that just jumps out at me is we lost 403,000 head of cow-calf producers in our industry, our neighbors. because we couldn't defend ourselves. With the diet hell scare, the war on fat, as we came through that, it was devastating. We all know it was fake news, wasn't it? That's all come to pass. We know that was, most of it wasn't accurate, but we couldn't defend ourselves. I challenge you that if we don't handle this sustainability message, this is what we could be dealing with again. I believe this is our greatest risk as an industry. That's how important I believe it is that we get out and we tell this story. We've got a great story to tell. When we look at what's going on in here and we think about this, the United States has the most environmentally efficient beef production system in the world. But we're always on the defensive, aren't we? We're always on the defensive. We've got to take the offensive. If you look at this data, I want you to think about what we see from our Australian and New Zealand friends. I think when you look at the way they've messaged, you would think they would have the best environmental footprint because they do a better job of telling the story than we do. So I challenge each and every one of you in the room to start it at the local level. We have to get involved. We have to start going to our schools. We have to start going to our local chamber of commerce. We got to tell the story. We have to do it at the state level, and we have to do it at the national level. I believe this is, if alternative meats are going to gain any real steam, they will gain steam if we can't tell this story. We've got an incredible product. You can see the way consumers are responding to the quality we're putting out there. Did everybody see that? We've gained 7% market share of spending over the last 20 years. That's pretty incredible, isn't it? Absolutely incredible. But this is one of those things I would say, don't take it lightly. Again, we've got a great story. There's some incredible experts out there that we can rely on to pull this data together. And together, I think we can tell the story and the consumers will hear our message. As I summarize where we are here today, again, I would just say to you, the days of the boom and bust cattle cycle, in my opinion, are gone. We are making this transition to a demand-driven market, which I think is incredibly positive for producers in all segments of our industry as we look down the road. Drought is their biggest risk. It's our greatest risk, and as Dr. Douglas told us, hey, we're moving back into a La Nina weather pattern. So we're going to have more risk. And this is likely going to be a pattern that we're going to have to deal with here over the next several years. But again, that would be our greatest risk from a herd reduction standpoint. We've got record production of all these proteins. We've got a lot of protein out there. Strong demand, export potential that we think is phenomenal. I'm very, very positive with where I look at things. And again, from an overall market standpoint, for those of you that are cow-calf producers, the low in prices is in. I hope everybody saw that. This market where the inventory numbers have peaked, our production numbers have peaked, the low in prices is behind us. Doesn't mean we're going to be a rocket shot coming out of here, but we're going to see this market continue to get a little bit better over time. The ASF, obviously that's an issue for us here for a period of time. That's going to take a while in here, another probably 2 or 3 years as we navigate that. The volatility, I think we've displayed that to you today. There's a lot of volatility. It's not going away. Those of you in the room that haven't embraced some sort of risk management in your programs, I encourage you to walk that walk, make that step. These swings, think about what Don said. 3 moves over $16 a hundred in a 6-month period of time. That's over $200 a head, 3 of them in 2019. When I hear that, remember that created a lot of opportunity, didn't it? There were a lot of opportunities in that kind of market environment if you're really paying attention and taking advantage of it. The other thing that I would say as we look down the road is this price discovery issue, we're going to have to roll up our sleeves and go to work on it. Again, it's not a big issue today, but we don't want to get to a point down the road in here that we haven't addressed it. I do believe we're going to see more outside capital continue to flow into the U.S. I think we'll see more foreign capital flow into the U.S. It's a great hedge for them, isn't it? We've got the most robust, we've got the safest food supply in the world. When you see disease outbreaks in other parts of the world that we're seeing, that tells me we're likely going to see further investments out of those countries as they look at a way to hedge the bet on their production in those countries. I do believe agriculture is well positioned. I believe U.S. agriculture is well positioned. As I said earlier, I'm bullish. I'm friendly for the U.S. cattle producers because of the landscape that we see. Again, it's not going straight up. As Kevin said, the markets, we still got to continue to lay the foundation, work through these supplies. But I think we have a very, very bright future and something we should all be excited about. I do want to say to each and every one of you in the room, we couldn't do this without your support. For those of you that aren't Cattle Facts members, we've got some booths in the back. We'll have a booth in the trade show. We need your support. We need to be working with you. I mean, I put our research and analysis team up with anybody, anywhere. These people are good, they're dedicated, they work their tails off for you, and they're pretty darn accurate. They're not always right, but they're pretty doggone accurate, and I put them up with anybody, anytime, any day. So please, we'd love the opportunity to work with you if we can, and I really appreciate each and every one of you coming today and supporting the event. I would like to take this opportunity to once again thank our sponsors, Purina Animal Nutrition and Zoetis. They've been long-term sponsors. This goes back over 25 years, that relationship. Don't take for granted what those people do to support our industry and support events like that. We couldn't pull them off without it. I'd also like to remind all of you to take full advantage of a busy day ahead with the DC issues update, the regional committee meetings that will be happening later today, the NCBA trade show, and of course tonight we have the Sunset Music Festival this evening at the historic Sunset Station kicking off at 7 p.m. Again, thank you all very much for your support. We really appreciate the opportunity to serve each and every one of you. Have a great rest of the convention.
Again, you've been listening to coverage of the 2020 Cattle Facts Outlook Seminar at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show. I'm Stephen Orr. This is the Farm Station. All ag, all day.